Ja, en deze klanken luiden het volgende in. We hebben studiogasten en ze zijn een beetje kaal. Maar goed, dat heeft allemaal te maken met een informatietour die namelijk door het land heen gaat. En de jongen tegenover mij kan daar veel meer over vertellen.
Goedemiddag, ik ben Iwan van Politiek Informatiecentrum de Invalshoek. Wij gaan met antifascistische thema's het hele land door momenteel. Op het moment, in navolging van themaavond over Jos van der Velpen, die een boek heeft geschreven over fascistische structuren, hadden we gemeend iemand te moeten uitnodigen die er middenin heeft gezeten en die er veel meer vanaf weet dan wij weten. Om het gewoon wat meer naar de mensen toe te brengen, om het iets persoonlijker te maken ook. Dat mensen ook kunnen erkennen wat er in de eigen omgeving gebeurt. We hadden gemeend dat we moeten doen met Jörg Welzer, een antifascist in Duitsland die al 13 jaar actief is. Met hem reizen we naar 8 plekken in Nederland, waar onder andere Amsterdam. Vanavond zullen we zijn in Frankrijk om 8 uur. Om zijn persoonlijke verhaal te horen en samen te discussiëren en samen te kijken wat fascisme daadwerkelijk in onze omgeving betekent. I will go on in English, because I will ask Jörg some questions. First thing, good afternoon.
Hello.
Tell us something about yourself.
Yeah, what shall I tell you about myself?
How did you become active, for example, in the anti-fascist movement?
Yeah, when I was 15, I was organized at the Young Socialists, and when I was 16, the first fascist pamphlets came up in my school, and we were very interested about how did it, and we infiltrated with two comrades this fascist group in our town. And this was the first way I started my anti-fascist work, and after this I worked over 1 year in this group as an undercover.
You just started to infiltrate, or you were organized?
I was organized there for 1 year, but yeah. I was organized in the anti-fascist group very much more.
In what kind of way you were organized in the anti-fascist group? Which group, for example?
I worked at the first time at the Young Socialists, as I said, and on the other hand, I worked in the anti-fascist group of my school, but I had to. I did that before, but I had to because the fascists sent me there to get some information about the anti-fascist group I was always in.
So you were in fact a double spy?
Right. Very difficult then.
It must have been, yes. How did you get out of the group? Did you get out of the group? And how long did it take?
Yeah. After 1 year and 2 months perhaps, I was recognized. When I did away some fascist posters during an election, and the fascists saw me, and so it was clear that I didn't belong to them really. And after that, I researched about them a lot times more, a long time. And once they saw me at a meeting place of them and beat me up very hefty, very hard, and with a screwdriver in my back and things like that. And after that, I had a five-year-long trial against them, and they in the end they had to pay 100,000 marks.
And they had to pay it to you?
No, unfortunately not, but to the state.
Okay, how are you organized now? You're still doing anti-fascist work.
Yeah.
On what kind of levels?
Yeah, at first I do it in my base group called Socialist Culture Work. Which is associated with the Young Socialists, but we are a bit more left-winged. And we do not only anti-fascist work, but work in the socialist direction, but we are connected with several other groups in the near surrounding. I try to coordinate a group of 15 groups, you know, on the local level at my hometown, and I work on further levels. For the area, we have got a newsletter that connects 35 groups from different political point of views, from feminist and vegan and communist, anarchist, autonomist and socialist and so on and so on. And at last, I work at the national network we are trying to build up at the moment and on the European level.
What kind of work do you do? Do you go to schools? Do you have militant actions? What does it contain?
Yeah, we have different qualities. We think in anti-fascist work it's quite important that you get many people together, even if they don't fight the system. Yeah, we have to fight fascism and we have to accept the different forms of resistance. And I myself do it on the information level and on the militant level too. I try to do everything that works, but we don't say no violence or only violence or something like that. It depends on the situation and we try to avoid it. We try to avoid violence. We try to be creative because it's much better. People are laughing about fascists, but see them as heroes and martyrs.
Mm-hmm. But still, you go to schools, I heard?
Yeah. I did it in the Netherlands, and I do it in Germany, and I did it in Denmark. And it's very interesting because most people abroad think it's a problem of Germany and not of their own country. And if you see the reasons for uprising neo-fascism in Germany, you can see that the same development happens in every European country at the moment, because it has to do with a trend, a right-wing trend in society, which you can see in the Netherlands or somewhere else. And so I try to get the pupils discuss about their own situation, about situation in school, and so on.
And what did you think when you spoke to the pupils? It was still different from Germany, or you see a lot of the same things happening in classes when you discuss thoughts from people?
We had, for example, a poll under German youth, and we asked them some questions. For example, what do you think about survival of the fittest? And 65% in Germany said, yes, that's right. And the interesting point in this sentence is that is the very base of fascist ideology. If you say the stronger one survives, and that's right. This is very important for fascists, and 65% said, okay, it is like that. And I did the same in Dutch school, and the result was the same, you know. And that's because they learn it in family, in school, and everywhere else, that you are judged about your status, about your work, and not about your personality. You have to use your elbow to get higher in society and higher in hierarchy and so on, and that's what they feel about it.
And you think it's a sign of right-wing ideology with pupils?
It must not be, because if you ask these pupils what they would vote, for example, they nearly vote exactly the same as the adults. It's a question of thinking, of ideas in head, and it gives a base. It gives a base to fascists to work with these pupils and to think some of their suggestions are right.
And they succeed in that?
Yeah, they succeed in that. But the problem is not so much that so many pupils get go into fascist groups, but the whole society and the thinking of society is changing. For example, 5 years ago, we had this Republikaner as right-wing party, and they had a very, very strong restrictions against immigrants in their program. And nowadays, the CDU, the governing party, has got the same suggestions in their program. So the development is so that in social accepted units, everything is turning to the right side and left ideas are not longer important in society.
Okay, we come back after this next record.
Yeah.
Goedemiddag, we zijn weer terug met de volgende vraagstelling aan Jurgen Weltzer, antifascist uit Duitsland. We talked about earlier that you infiltrated in a fascist organization. What kind of organization was it?
It was, at that time they were called Junge Nationaldemokraten. Out of this group later they found the National Front, which has been prohibited now. In the last time.
And where exactly was it? In which place?
It was in my hometown, but they were organized in the whole area because there were too few people only to organize there. And I come from Gütersloh, which is in the near of Bielefeld in North Rhine-Westphalia.
What exactly did you have to do for them, more specific?
I had to test people writing to the group. For example, if someone was interested in the group, I had to get information about them. I had to infiltrate an anti-fascist group. They wanted me not to appear often as a fascist on my school because they wanted me to get a pupil speaker without the people knowing what my really political opinion was, you know, things like that. And I had to do my political work at that school not very openly, to be not recognized as a fascist. This was very important. And after that, when I got higher in hierarchy, they wanted me to make an open pupils group from the Nationalist Front.
And how exactly did it come that you could infiltrate in that? Because you just said you were active as a young socialist. How come they didn't know? How come they accept you?
I was lucky because there was no one really organized on my school, and I hadn't been active for a long time in politic scene, so they couldn't know me. And another thing was they tried to get me out of my normal social relationships. I was very often together with them, and they tried. They thought they would knew me, so they trusted me, you know. And this made it a bit easier for me to work there. And another thing was they wanted me to tan like a hippie, not to be recognized at school. They wanted me to wear things from the peace movement and things like that. And that was exactly what I would have done without them. So I didn't have to change my outfit or something like that.
But didn't they put you through some kind of tests or something?
Yeah. they gave you always this stickers with Ausländer raus and such things. And after that, without that you know it, they control whether you've done it in your surroundings where you live and so. And I put the stickers on everything I could find and put them away afterwards so they could see I had done it. Another thing was they had this really big newspaper for pupils, 20,000 appearance, 20,000, what's the name? Erscheinungs. Yeah. And at the day before it was given to the pupils in a great mass, I had to leave some at special places, for example, at the table of the teacher and so that the people on school know there are fascists on our school, but they don't know why, where, who it is. And then they asked about other people they knew whether this newspapers really appeared before. Understand this?
I understand this. But didn't you get moral problems with it? I mean, it's hard work working against the people you believe in.
Yeah, it was a problem that the people I worked with together in the anti-fascist scene didn't know what I was doing in the fascist organization. And one time we organized an anti-fascist evening on my school, and the fascists came without. I didn't know it. Yeah, and then I had to do as if I didn't know my friends so good as I did, and I had to talk with the fascists, and my anti-fascist friends were really astonished, and it was a bit difficult then.
But then still, didn't you underestimate what you were doing? Wasn't it really like, I'm doing something and I really don't know where I'm starting on?
Yeah, it was a bit adventurous for me personally, and I didn't know how dangerous it was, in fact.
It was quite naive.
Quite naive, yes.
And what was your impression of the fascist?
Yeah, I expected them to be very, very different from as I saw afterwards. I thought they were all military dressed and military organized and people perhaps with horns on their head, you know, because I couldn't imagine that someone really normal gets a fascist. But they were all very nice, all very friendly. They had a good relationship to each other and they fought politically without thinking of a career. And these were all things I knew from my background. And so it was very difficult for me not to make friends with them. It was very difficult for me to hate them because I got to know them better and I saw the reasons for the single persons getting fascist.
Okay, we will be right back after this record. Hello, we're back again with Jurg Welzer. I want to talk about another thing. It's called skinhead in Holland. A lot of people associate skinheads with fascism. They still think that every skinhead is a Nazi. You call yourself a socialist skinhead. You look like one. How is it with the skinheads in Germany? Do they have you got a movement for it? Is it fascist? How are they organized? Mm. Are they organized politically, nihilistic, or right-wing orientated?
Mm. It's a bit difficult because for me, skinhead is not a form of political dress or something like that, but skinhead's a lifestyle. So on one hand, I'm a skinhead, and on the other hand, I'm a socialist. So I'm organized as a socialist and living like a skinhead. And this is not very difficult to bring together, but I don't make, for example, politics on too much politics on concerts to convince people from something or so. On concert it's much fun and keeping out fascists, okay? And the thing what skinhead all about is for me anti-establishment, anti-hierarchy and having fun, drinking, dancing and things like that. And but there is a movement for not racist skinheads. It's called Sharp in Germany, and they are quite organized. But they call themselves not politic, which means they only keep away from Nazis, and that's it. And Redskins are normally organized as I am in a socialist party or groups or something like that. We don't have a Redskinhead party or something like that.
And what do you think of most of the skinheads? How are they orientated?
I think most of them are not political, and even the Secret Service of Germany says 70% of skins are not right extreme or something like that. And they even see there are many left-wing skins. But the problem is, in the public opinion, they are interested in skins called Nazis, because if they say on one hand, everyone who has no hair is a Nazi, they can say on the other hand, everyone who's got hairs is not a Nazi. And that's what happens. And if you only see a skinhead problem, we have no problem in Germany, because we have very few skinheads at all.
Mm-hmm. And you just said you were doing social work, youth work. Has that got anything to do with skinheads?
This has something to do with skinheads, but I don't do social work because I'm not a social worker. I do political youth work. This is a difference for me. I want people to do something for their own interest, and we do a disco, for example, in my hometown, where we try to get all youth cultures together. Youth cultures like punks, skins, psychobilly, scooter, skater, and so on, heavy metals, and a rapper, who are mostly immigrants. We try to keep to get them together and have a peaceful party. Sometimes aggressive is okay, because it's of some music, and so sometimes it's aggressive, this is okay, but no beatings up and some things like that. And skinheads are often infiltrated by Nazis, and if we say we accept you being skinhead, the only thing you are not allowed to be is Nazi, and then you can have your party here and play your music and so on. It's much better than exclude them, because then the Nazis come and give them the opportunity to be skinhead in their way.
But how do you start it off then? I couldn't imagine that you put here skinhead, hip-hop people or whatever interest musically or cultural they've got, or immigrants, Turkish youth, for example.
That's very funny.
You cannot put them together here.
Yeah, but
it's
but you
totally
can
impossible.
You can do it in my hometown, because we did it like that. We played three songs ska, and then only the ska people were dancing, for example. After this three songs wave, every skinhead is going from the dance floor, and the waves are, and so on. And it always went like that. And people had no idea about, for example, skinhead culture and about skinhead clothes and skinhead music and so on. And then they saw it, and it was no taboo anymore, because they saw the music is all right, the clothes are nice, and so they began to dance to the skinhead music too. And so it wasn't not anymore stigmatized. Mm-hmm. And so it was getting more and more not interesting how you call yourself, because skinhead wasn't Nazi, because you could hear it from the text, and it wasn't important. It was no political thing anymore. And we just said the very important thing is, if someone is interested in something, he doesn't want it to be destroyed. If the skinheads have their party there and can hear their music there, they have no interest to be thrown out of the house, you know? And that's exactly what happened. When one skinhead started to stress, another one went there and said, stop this, because I want to have my party here. And this is very different from a punk going there and saying, you dirty skinhead, stop that, because I beat you up then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is the difference. They try to be peaceful on their own.
And have you got proof that this kind of work works? Like skinhead youth isn't interested in extreme right activism.
Yeah, our experience is, if there's a very strong skinhead scene with everything belonging to it, with fun, music, a bit aggression and something like that, they don't need Nazis to have fun, and that's exactly what it's all about. You know, if they get fun on their own, they don't need the Nazis. And the thing in our town is, we had 120 skins at a time. And we have now still many, many skins, but no Nazi scene. It totally worked. I'm totally convinced of this concept. We isolated the fascist skins from the rest, and from 120, there were about 5 fascists, and they are having no fun, and the rest is having a peaceful party with us.
So we can learn something about your work then, but we go to the next record. We zijn bij het laatste gedeelte gekomen over Jörg Welzer. Jörg, how do you like it so far in Holland? The evenings, for example.
Very stressy, but very nice, because there's always different audience and different ages, different views on culture and everything like that. So it's a bit difficult for me to handle, but very interesting so far.
And do you only speak for so-called Dutch people, or do you speak for migrants?
Sometimes there are some migrants, and I had the impression that they really liked it, and they like to be informed. But I had also the impression that there's a bit difficulties between Dutch people and migrant people, even in this evenings together.
What kind of difference?
Difficulties. I've got. The impression some people, some migrant people, asked me about the credibility of Antifa work in Germany, and I had the impression they really wanted to say to some Dutch anti-fascists that they aren't credible, you know.
And they didn't give any stress, right?
They didn't give any stress. No.
Okay. You also work together with Dutch organizations.
Yeah, together we were at ARIC, which is a kind of archive, and we have no. Comparable things in Germany. They are very, very well organized. And today I was at Anne Frank Stichting, which it's a very big one, you know, 80 people working for anti-fascist things and being paid for it. And we can't imagine this in Germany. This is very much better here.
Are you working together with them?
Yeah, I try to get connections to go into schools and inform pupils and things like that. And I think it will work.
Okay. Als je meer wil weten over Jörg Welzer en zijn werk, of je wil gewoon meedoen aan een antifascistische discussie, vanavond in de Frankrijk om 8:00. Bedankt.
Dit is Radio De Vrije Keizer op de 96.2 in de Amsterdamse Ether.